1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Hello, everyone. Welcome to The Local Youth Worker, a podcast brought to you by Reformed Youth Ministries. I'm your host, John Parrott. This is episode number 433, and I'm here with Oscar, Matt, and Linda. Linda, good to see you again. You're just getting back from Montana, right?
True, I am. Back in Florida, where it is much warmer.
What was the temperature in Montana?
Oh, the highs were actually up into the 40s while I was there, but then the last day it snowed and snowed and snowed, and I think it got down below 10 degrees before I left.
Wow.
Whereas here today, it's probably 78 degrees already, and it's only like 10:40 a.m., so.
Just a slight swing there for sure. Mm-hmm. Matt Beham, you have been on the podcast a lot of times, but it's been a little while, and some of that is you're no longer in youth ministry. There's a sense in which, in some ways, we never really graduate from youth ministry. We're always dealing with youth in some capacity. But update everybody what you're doing, where you are.
Yeah, I am the co-lead pastor at Redeemer in San Antonio now. And so that's the same church that I worked at as the youth pastor for a long time. So I'm really thankful. And you're absolutely right. I feel like, I still feel like a youth pastor most of the time. I did, however, get to do a youth retreat this weekend, which was really fun. Nice. And my wife told me that I was probably trying a little too hard to connect with the youth. So it's pretty funny. You're out of it for a little bit and you're like, okay, wait, how do they think again? But I was really thankful to get to do it. So thanks, Oscar, for asking me.
I was going to ask where it was. What was it, in San Antonio, or did you travel out of the city a little bit?
It was in New Braunfels. So it's called Rancho Palooza.
It's nice.
14th year, I think. We started it, 14 years ago for a bunch of South Texas churches.
Very cool. Nice. And Oscar, this is your first time on the podcast. So why don't you just tell everybody where you're from, what you're doing, all that good stuff.
Yeah, my name is Oscar Palin. I'm the Director of Youth Ministries at Redeemer in San Antonio. I have had the pleasure in the past of working alongside Linda Oliver in youth ministry as well. And so this is like a happy reunion for me on the podcast to get to hang out with Linda and Matt to just be upstairs from me, which is fun. Matt was speaking at our senior high retreat over this past weekend, which was fun. Matt, do you want to tell everyone how you shorten Nicodemus's name?
Called him Nico, which was probably trying too hard to be funny. And unfortunately, there was a kid there named Nico. So I kept on just saying his name. And I felt bad.
So everybody would look over at Nico when you'd say that? I mean, it's kind of...
I almost called him out like on the last day. I think we've got a Nico here. Nico, would you stand up? But I thought that would probably be a bad idea.
Yeah. Come down front, Nico.
Yeah.
You'll never see him again. And look, as we were getting started, I noticed, Oscar's got an RYM shirt on. Matt has an RYM sticker on his Yeti there. Linda, do you have anything RYM related?
Not on my person or near me right now.
Cause I've got a little RYM tumbler. Just curious, not trying to shame you, Linda. It was more curiosity. You can, help us out in other ways. So just kind of letting people know behind the scenes a little bit. One of the challenges of doing a podcast consistently is coming up with content. It's just trying to think of something to talk about all the time. And Linda and I were kind of brainstorming, and she suggested a podcast on leadership. And so we're going to be talking about a lot of just kind of different aspects of leadership. As we've all been a part of RYM in some form or another for the past several years, we get to interact with a lot of youth workers from all across the United States at our summer conferences, at our training. We know, as we were saying before this podcast records, and those who are listening know this, the church is filled with sinners, and that extends to the leadership of the church. And no church has a perfect leader, perfect pastors, perfect elders, deacons, anyone in leadership. And, we hear some stories that are hard sometimes. We hear some some situations and scenarios from youth workers where they're just in a tough spot. And so some of what we might talk about today gets into some of that, and trying to talk in a way that's not taking shots at the church, not taking shots at church government or leadership, whatever kind of denomination our listeners are in, but trying to speak candidly at the same time and trying to grow and to learn from various experiments. And so we hope it's a helpful conversation. Linda, I was going to kind of turn it over to you just to take the reins a little bit and kind of lead us in this, and we'll just kind of see where we get from there.
Yeah, so I think my hope is that this will be a conversation that's helpful, because so many of us, when we enter ministry, we get training in terms of ministry skills. Like we get trained in how to teach, we get trained in how to run programs, we get trained in here's how to make sure you're on top of the budget, or doing relational ministry and things like that. But there's not as often a lot of training in how to develop and manage people. And that's something you're going to have to do in ministry, whether you're leading a staff or you're just leading volunteers. You have to know how to manage and develop people in some way. And so just having had conversations with Oscar and Matt in the past, I knew that this was an area that Redeemer has, their church has thought a lot about. And why don't we just start out with you all giving us an overview of kind of Redeemer's whole approach to this topic and how you develop your people.
Yeah, thanks for, I'm so glad when you started talking about church leadership and that we're sinners. And so I'm glad you had me on as you thought about that. You know, thanks for asking. Really what I'm going to do is I'm going to parrot a lot of what our founding pastor did. So Tom Gibbs founded this church, 2002. He's now the president of Covenant Seminary, and what he did that was so beautiful and helpful for our church is he really kind of brought in some of the family systems theory stuff that really was kind of pioneered by, I mean, it's biblical, it's very biblical, but it was kind of packaged and pioneered for the secular world by Friedman and others kind of in the 1900s and so late 1900s. And some of the things that he kind of brought in and taught us is just the importance of self-differentiation, understanding who you are, where you end, where someone else begins, the importance of not getting triangled in relationship, and really the leader being a low anxiety presence in a system, because systems experience, like, it's not just that people experience anxiety, it's that the system experiences anxiety. And so the leader has to be the one who kind of helps set the tone and grows in grace himself so that the system can experience health. That is like a really quick overview of some of the things that Tom kind of brought to us. It's been incredibly helpful as we think about leadership development and health of a system.
I came to Redeemer about 3 years ago, and Matt had done youth ministry here for 13 years before that. And so a lot of this stuff was relatively new to me coming in. And I think starting working at Redeemer and doing ministry in San Antonio, I learned that I was quite an anxious person. Mm-hmm. And so Matt kind of helping me, you know, figure out how to exist in a non-anxious way has helped me see a lot of like the beautiful things that Redeemer does for its staff people. And I'm just excited to be in a place that loves its people really well. I have felt really loved and cared for by Matt and by our staff and our elders. And it's been a beautiful thing to like learn about and help other people grow in, as well as I'm currently like leading staff people and leading volunteers, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that systems theory kind of gives you a really good framework for how you all approach this, it sounds like. And then when you're looking at like individual people, whether that be staff members, volunteers, whatever, and you're looking at how to develop them, what are your goals for the person that's being developed?
Yeah. Well, so one of the things that we think about first is that, you know, if you remember Stanley Hauerwas talks about getting married, and he said, you don't really know the person you're getting married to, which is a little bit of an overstatement, but it's true. You can know a lot of things about the person you're hiring, but you don't really know the person you're hiring. And so even kind of from the very get-go, you know that it's going to take a long time. You have like a, you kind of have like a 2-year on-ramp with somebody generally to kind of have them absorb, not just kind of like be taught the culture, but just absorb the culture of your church and experience it. And so you're thinking apprenticeship for, you know, kind of a strong connection and an apprenticeship for those first couple of years where, we're really kind of thinking, okay, like, Oscar, so I'm going to use Oscar as an example. You're coming in here and you have a very hard road ahead of you because you're taking over for, you know, somebody who has been the youth pastor here for 13 years. And we understand that that's going to be incredibly difficult. And so we know that there's going to be tons of failures, that you're going to feel inadequate. Like, we just know from the very get-go that we have low expectations. That doesn't mean that we have low expectations because we don't like Oscar or think he's great. It just means that, like, this is going to be hard. And I think a lot of churches don't hire knowing that it's going to be hard. And that's kind of silly to me. So I answered a different question than what you were asking, but you just know that you're going to have a lot of runway in any transition in a church. That's from the senior leader the senior leader doesn't just get to come in and do what he wants in any system. He will do best when he just kind of learns the system before he does anything. So one of the goals when we think about leadership development is giving our people a lot of leeway in that. And then we think about developing them for the future of the kingdom and not just Redeemer. So that's really important. You don't just have a role here at Redeemer. So we're not just hiring for a role, we're hiring a person. So that's a slightly different thing. Like, you're not a tool. You're a person with your own personality, your giftings, your past, and you're going to do something that needs to be deeply connected to what we're doing, but you're probably going to take it in a different direction or further than what we did before. And so part of that is just learning who that person is so that we can maximize his gifts and calling from Jesus for the health of the organization. So Oscar does things differently than I do. We wanted him to do things the same for a couple of years so that we could learn him, he could learn us, and then give him more freedom to do things differently.
Yeah, that's interesting. It just seems, common sense in a lot of ways, but like you said, a lot of churches don't function in that and they ignore that. And that is just so important, what everything you're saying. You know, I'm curious, it's one thing for the church leadership to have that mindset and to think of this apprenticeship and kind of a 2-year on-ramp, as you said. What about the people of the church? You know, how do you get them to buy into that? And are they educated on that as well from the leadership of the church?
That's a great question. I think those things, I think we do an okay job of giving little hints all the time in the way that we teach, in the way that we talk, in the way that we, you know, stand by, you know, a hire. And so a lot of that really does start at the session level, where our session, again, so the leaders modeling a low anxious presence are not going to get hijacked by somebody who's frustrated that this person is different or they're doing things a different way, or I'm just experiencing sadness because this is, you know, because Oscar's not Matt. I'm sorry, Oscar, I'm just going to use us as an example. It's the one we know. But the leaders should, if the leader are trained decently well, they're going to recognize for what that is. It's not sin. It's not problem. It's difference. Difference is always scary for people. And so oftentimes, for whatever reason in the church, the first tool that we use is like the sin tool, like, oh, this is bad. And it's actually most of the time it's just difference. And sin is what happens after we deal with difference poorly as people. That's when we get angry, upset, frustrated. We don't mourn well. And so as our leaders are aware of those dynamics, we're all growing in this. None of us are really great at it. Like, everyone is bad at it, but we're all growing in it. But having leaders who are going to stick by you and be aware of those dynamics helps to just turn the temperature down for everybody in the church. And I think Oscar's experienced that, and maybe he wants to speak to that.
Yeah, I think part of the thing that Redeemer has done really well is like, trust me. So I don't know, year 22 to 24, when you're young and just starting ministry and figuring it out, you have to work through a lot of, I'm arrogant and I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm going to pretend like I know what I'm doing. And being in a place that tells you that you're young and arrogant and you need to figure it out, but still loves you and like is committed to you is really important. Like that high accountability, like we're going to tell you when you are not doing what you need to be doing, but high grace of we love you anyways. And we're going to help you grow and change and build you up to be an excellent minister of the gospel, right? To students specifically, like that's important for any church, I think, to figure out, because otherwise we're going to keep seeing this, like, I don't know what the average tenure of a youth worker is. Linda and John, you may know that, but it's not very long. It's not very long at all. And it's kind of sad. And so we want at Redeemer to help give people longevity, help them figure out what a life in ministry looks like, and help them grow in areas where maybe they're weaker, and really highlight the things that they're really good at as leaders. So,
and yeah, I it's so funny. Some people listening to this might hear Oscar say that he was called arrogant and think, well, that's not very kind. That's not very loving, you know? And they, what the misunderstanding there is exactly what Oscar says. You have to have high grace. You know, if you don't have high grace, you can't ever say things like that. You know what I mean? But you have to, but within the context of grace, that gives us the ability to have a high accountability culture so we can really deal with what we need to deal with. Most systems don't like dealing with hard things. So what ends up happening is slowly over time, unwritten rules and expectations are there. Unknown or unfelt by the youth pastor or youth worker kind of things are placed on them. And then all of a sudden they're experiencing like, I'm really confused. It doesn't seem like my leaders are like, I'm interacting the same way. I wonder what's happening right now. And then all of a sudden, boom, like, hey man, like, we're just sorry. We kind of are going to go a different direction. And you're like, oh, that's a failure of leadership because this person was not able to talk about those unwritten or unsaid expectations that were placed on this guy. And that's really sad. So we don't want to do that to people.
Yeah, it sounds like one of the values you're bringing out is like you just want to have clarity and open communication about things, right? Like before we get into some more like details and stuff, can you talk a little bit more about what kinds of biblical principles and values influence your approach to this?
Yeah, so I'll just give a story about the kind of the differentiation thought here. So Jesus is hanging out with all of his disciples. If you remember the story, the mother of James and John come over to him and they're like, she was like, hey, do me a favor. And in that moment, a leader, right, can easily get hijacked. Okay, this is this is an individual. She's coming on behalf of other people. I don't know what's going on in the room, you know, behind the curtain, what's going on here. So it's easy to kind of like get hijacked in that, right? And Jesus is like, well, instead of, you know, he has a non-anxious presence because Jesus does that perfectly, right? Tell me what you want. You know what I mean? And then she says, make my sons kind of like to sit at your right and left hand. So now there's another experience going on, right? Now all of the disciples are kind of overhearing this and they're like, well, where do we stand in your kingdom? Okay, so now all of a sudden you've got all these different actors and all these different parties who are starting to get anxious about what's happening, right? And Jesus is able to, in this moment, say, well, it's not at, it's not my job to say who sits in my right or left hand, but can you drink the cup that I'm going to drink? And so it's just, so that principle, there's a differentiated leader. That's beautiful way of diffusing a situation and loving, still react, still like answering the question and loving everyone in that room at the same time. So he's our model, turns out, right? Some of the other things that we think about is, so I said it before, but apprenticeship, being connected to a master, someone who's done it before, I think is exactly the model of Jesus, right? Like just walk with him for 3 years, you know, and see what he does. But that's really important because we tend to think in American individualistic culture that creativity is opposed to apprenticeship. It's not. Actually, creativity and growth in your own personality and gifting and calling happens as you follow the path of a master and then take what he's done and then stand on his shoulders or her shoulders, right? And so that's kind of another thing. Another principle that we think about, that I think a lot about, is courage. So we've, again, alluded to it a little bit, but you have to have the courage to have the hard conversation. If you don't have the courage to have the hard conversation, you're not loving that person, right? If you have the conversation in a harsh way, you're not loving that person. So both of those things have to be in place as well. And then a big one is that mistakes and sins are not the same thing. Mistakes and sins are not the same thing. Now, every sin is a mistake, but not every mistake is a sin, right? And so we can make tons of mistakes in ministry. There are times where, you know, Oscar has a different strategy than me. So he clearly communicates what he wants to do. We talk about it. I think he's going to be wrong and it's going to fail miserably. No, I don't really think that. But I kind of, okay, like, but go for it. Let's see what happens, you know? And sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. And then we reevaluate. And we have not done any sins here. We have just figured something new out. So being a learner, like that goes with apprenticeship. We're in a learning process together. There you go.
Part of like just existing as a Christian is supposedly, so the Bible says, having some form of humility, right? Not very many of us are good at that, but it's really important for leaders to be able to be humble and say when they fail, when they're wrong, because that sets the expectation for everyone else. So Matt has, you know, admitted that he's wrong to me before, and that's good. Sometimes there's this temptation in the church to like stick our chests out as leaders and say like, hey, like you need to do, you know, this thing, 'cause it's like for building the kingdom. And like, we're actually behind that, all these, this like maybe domineering personality, we're actually hiding in our own insecurity and our own failures, that we're nervous about being found out. And so in all actuality, like me being humble, like enough to admit like, hey, I didn't do enough on my end to better prepare our whole youth team for this event that's coming up. And I'm really sorry about that. Being willing to like admit that is really huge for the people working with you, because they see, oh, like he just admitted wrongdoing and his life did not end, you know, like he, like Matt's not going to quit on Oscar because he makes mistakes. Right. And so that means that like the people who work, my girls and boys discipleship coordinators, the people who work with me in the youth ministry, right, they don't have to fear that like I'm going to be done with them because they make mistakes. Right. The leader's own spiritual health and the ability to be humble is like super, super, super important to being a successful leader. I also think like recognizing that sanctification takes place over time is a really big part of this. And so like being willing to be patient with people, love people as they're growing. Like if Matt didn't let me fail at some things when I first moved to San Antonio and was like trying to figure out, I never would have learned. I would not have grown. I would have just been, monkey following orders, I guess. I don't know. Like, and we don't want people to be that, right?
We want
people to,
We want wonderful people who are following Jesus in their own personalities.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, God made me a certain way. He made the people who work alongside me a certain way. He made Matt a certain way. And that means we have different strengths and weaknesses that aren't like your weaknesses aren't always necessarily bad. God's using your weaknesses to like force you to rely on other people and rely on him. So we need to like be comfortable with that, be comfortable in our weaknesses, and leverage our relationships with others to like build the kingdom of God versus like having a pity party about it.
Yeah. And I like that too. I mean, I was actually going to ask about weaknesses and you were kind of ending talking about that. And I'd love for the two of you to talk about that a little bit more, because I mean, it's so beautiful what you're describing, but this just cultivates a culture where it's okay to admit our weaknesses, to admit our brokenness, to admit, hey, I need someone else to step up in this area because I'm not good in this area. And so maybe just talk about how maybe the conversation in this environment lends itself to being able to talk about weaknesses, which is, it's a hard thing. It's hard to admit that at times. So Matt or Oscar, whoever wants to jump in.
Yeah, one of the things, what's the one of the things that Jesus said that we don't believe him? You will do greater things than me, you know? And I'm going to answer your question, John. I'm sure I will in a second. When he says that, you're just like, no, we won't. Right. And, talk about the humility of the Son of God here, right? Like, he is like, I'm going to send the Holy Spirit and you're going to do greater things than the ministry that I've done. Mm-hmm. And every single leader, teacher, whatever, I think has to hope and pray that the people who are growing, that they're growing, are going to do greater things than you are. And I think that's that we have to believe that. If Jesus believed that, we have to believe that about the people that we're leading. So I think I was just kind of piggybacking on what he said. Yeah, weakness. The very first temptation, I really think that humanity like really believes, like, because the very first temptation, you can be like God. Well, it's clearly not you can be like God morally, because we already were like God morally, right? We already were like God. We reflect his image. I think the first temptation is you could be like God. You can transcend your limitations, right? You can be deity-like, God-like. And we still kind of believe that, right? To put weakness and sin in the same category, like put limitation and sin in the same category, is a total category failure, and exactly the temptation of the serpent, right? Besides disobeying God's word and stuff like that. But like, I think getting that straight theologically is really going to help us get that straight practical theology, like in the way that we think about ministry.
I would love for us to get like really practical on something. So like, talking about weaknesses, right? Like anybody who has supervised anyone has to deal with weaknesses at some point and think through, how do I address this person's weaknesses, right? How do you actually practically help people grow in their areas of weakness?
Well, we at Redeemer, we do yearly evals, right? Like, we have like I make everyone, and everyone in our system has to do this. All our staff people, they have to fill out an evaluation form. Like, what were my goals I set last year? Did I accomplish them? Why didn't I accomplish them if I didn't? How did they go if I did accomplish them? Was it what I was expecting? How do I need to grow in this next year? Right? It's really important that we just set the expectation that we're going to talk about them, but it's also really important that you don't just do that once a year. Every week in our staff meeting, right? Like in our youth staff meeting, we're talking about the events that happened and like how they went. If something didn't get done, whose responsibility was that? Did we just not talk about it and then it didn't get done? So then it's my fault, right? Like you just need to set the expectation that you're going to talk about weaknesses and not be mean about it, not be harsh about it. But instead frame it around, like, we are building up God's kingdom in the city of San Antonio or wherever you are, right? And so this isn't a personal attack against you, but it's actually me doing this because I love Jesus and I love building God's kingdom. And so we're going to pursue that. We're going to set the expectation that it's okay to talk about weaknesses and that it's not game over if you fail.
And I think you'll have to forgive me, Linda. You know I like to live in theory world, but I'll try to make it really mm-hmm. practical. Like, trust is the most important thing in a system. Trust. So we Oscar and I we meet regularly and we don't always talk about youth stuff. We talk about life and we pray for each other and we see how things are going. And so I think that working on anything, like if there's a deficiency, working on anything in your life is going to happen when there's trust built in, real trust. So we like each other, you know what I mean? And so then we can talk about these things. And a lot of times, and I don't know how other systems are, a lot of times there is not a regular meeting with boss and employee. And I think it's really valuable to have a regular meeting where you grow trust, where you have feedback loops, and where you're able to work on things so that, you know, I was talking to a friend. I remember this girl was like, yeah, every time that in my Christian college someone invited me out to lunch, I knew she was going to tell me something I was doing wrong, right? Like, I don't know if you've ever experienced a system like that. That sounds awful, right? But sometimes that happens in work systems, right? Like every time the boss has to come talk to me, it's because I've done something wrong. And what is that going to do? That's just going to drive you underground. Like, you're just scared. And that's just not healthy. So we have regular meetings where we just are normally just hanging out, talking. It's good for us. And it's good for our kids. It's good for our system.
Yeah. And I think like part of that is just like enjoying time with one another. So like I don't always stay on topic in my staff meeting. Now, some people might find that annoying, but I actually do it on purpose. Yeah, Linda probably found it annoying when I was like that when we worked together. But, I'd adapt if the people on my team didn't like that. But I am very comfortable getting off topic because I think like the idea of like having fun together is really, really important. Mm-hmm. We even do that as like a whole church staff once a week. We meet together every Monday morning, and like the first 15 minutes of the meeting is just like everyone coming to the meeting and like sitting down, laughing. Our staff meetings are like very joyful, and like people who work here are like, yeah, Monday morning is my favorite part. One of my favorite things that we do often because it's fun.
That sounds awesome. And it's like, hey, I want to come work with you guys. That that just sounds great. Well, I shouldn't say that. I like working at RYM. Brent, Corbin, if you're listening to this. But it sounds like a great culture, all that to say. I'm thinking, okay, maybe we've got 10 more minutes or so. There are people out there listening to this who are like, yes, that sounds amazing, but I don't have that at all. What are some thoughts for those? I mean, it could be parents out there who are serving on a youth committee. It could be elders listening to this, deacons, but also it could be youth workers, other pastors listening to this. What's advice for them of trying to maybe steer the ship in another direction if this is not happening in your church culture, you know, among staff? Any thoughts there, Matt or Oscar or Linda?
Yeah, and that's really hard. And my heart goes out that you really can't do a lot if you're in kind of in a smaller part of the system to change the whole, but you can do something, I think. When they talk about this again in your little organisms or your systems that you're in, you can change how you relate, right? And so I would like, so a great, so let's go back to the Bible again, you know, Jesus talking to Peter and John at the very end of John's gospel. And Jesus doesn't say that John is going to stay alive until Jesus gets back. We know that doesn't happen, but Peter's like, well, hang on a second. Well, what about me? And Jesus is just like, hey, Peter, like you don't worry about him. You follow me. Remember that? So he's helping him actually not worry about what everybody else is doing. He's helping him to stay focused on what he can do to be faithful, right, to Jesus. And so even though it's hard, you have to resist the urge to do a couple of things, to get triangulated, start complaining about your leaders. Like, you're going to want to complain when your system doesn't love you well. And so you actually have to resist that urge. The best thing that you could do is humble yourself in it. And if you can't handle it anymore, you should probably leave, and that's fine. But if you can, you humble yourself in it and you just keep receiving. And what you'll probably find is that you'll probably actually grow in trust with that system a little bit when you resist the urge to get triangulated, start complaining, getting frustrated. Another thing that you can do is we have a tendency when things are difficult in our lives to focus on everybody else, right? Like, so in youth ministry, like, oh gosh, those parents, they just don't care about discipleship. Or why, like, that's an elder. Like, why don't they send their kids to youth group? You know? So you're always thinking, okay, like, what do they need to do to change? And that's just not healthy for you as a person. To lower your anxiety, you say, okay, I can't change that. That, in fact, that's why we're Reformed, you know? Sorry, anyone out there, this is Reformed Youth Ministries, right? That's why we're Reformed. We just say, it's actually the Holy Spirit's job to change these people. It's my job to be responsible for what I'm responsible for. So if they're not sending their kids, I'm going to focus on the health that we do have. And I'm going to stop worrying about the health we don't have. And that actually is going to grow. That's a better thing for you to do. So don't focus on everything they're doing wrong. Let's just focus on what you can do faithfully. That's very unfun to hear. Oscar's heard me say that to him a lot, though.
It's a good word, though. It is, yeah, for sure. But I mean, you know, there's so much wisdom there, but the tendency to triangulate, as you said, to gossip about this leader and to try to recruit to your side. And I mean, that's obviously just going to divide and going to create disunity, and it's just going to permeate the system that you're in. So, and that's good. Oscar, I think you're going to speak up.
Yeah, I think, like I said, kind of towards the beginning, I realized how anxious I was, like, when I got to Redeemer, right? And so what I've been unlearning, you know, right, like, just being faithful and, like, remembering that, like, I'm in a system that, like, trusts me has been really big, but also, like, you know, I've heard stories, you know, where maybe the youth ministry is super united, but they feel incredibly disconnected from leadership. And those situations are awful. And that's why it's so important for maybe, you know, members of the youth ministry to pursue relationship, just like going out to lunch with like the chair of your youth committee, or asking the senior pastor to like spend time with you, assuming you think that they're trustworthy people, right? There's something to just like brushing elbows with people that is like so, so, so important, because then you start to realize like the boogeyman that you think is in front of you, that you think doesn't trust you, that you think doesn't love you, has actually been thinking very little about how, quote unquote, difficult you think you feel like they think you are. That made sense? Yeah, I just used a lot of modifiers.
It made total sense.
So like, yeah, brushing elbows, being connected to others, and then being willing to like utilize Matthew 18 in the most gracious way possible. When you're feeling disconnected, going to someone and speaking to them in a non-anxious way, like, hey, I'm feeling disconnected from you. Like, can we just like go have lunch? And you may be surprised, youth worker who's feeling disconnected from his church, or youth worker who feels like absolutely uncared for, that the pastor may be delighted that you wanted to connect with them.
Yeah, that's such a great point, Oscar. I do think I'm going to sound like a curmudgeon, I suppose, a little bit here, but there is a little bit of a generational difficulty. But the reality is everybody in their 20s has difficulty with this. Like if you're in your 20s, especially, anytime you have feedback or something didn't go quite as well, now in your anxiety, you're going to kind of do a flight or fight thing. That's what we all do, right? So now I'm going to either get frustrated with that person who gave me that feedback, or I'm going to hide and run away. And it was probably just feedback. But what you're doing if you don't deal with it, or you don't talk to that person, or if you don't bring it out in the open, is you're allowing that now to color the lens by which you experience the leadership of your church in a really unhealthy way. So we always have to be repenting of the way that we've just put that lens over it. Because like Oscar said, they probably deal with feedback from their elders all the time. And they just have learned to take that in stride and to continue to do the right thing. But that's just harder for a 20-year-old, so if there are any leaders, just remember that it is a little harder for a person starting out in their career to experience that without trust. But for that, you know, for you young 20-year-old people, like they probably didn't mean anything by it. Probably.
That's a good word. Go ahead, Lena.
I mean, one of the words that Oscar brought up was unlearn, right? And like we do have to unlearn our anxiety, and that is difficult, especially when you've just been surrounded by people who are anxious, right? Like I would want to surround myself with other people who can do these kinds of things we're talking about and be that differentiated presence so that I can learn to be that person. Even if I exist in a system where these things are not happening kind of for me, like from above, to the extent that I can, I want to help that system grow. And I also want to be a person who is doing this well for the people I am leading, right? And so how can I not be the person that perpetuates this kind of like, oh, we're not going to talk about these things with the people I'm leading? I wonder if we have time to do this, like if we could talk through some practical, like how can we make sure we're not part of the problem? And like, I'll pose some specific scenarios, right? So like, let's say there's a person who you've had all of those general conversations about this one area of weakness, and still like that person is just not growing in that area. Like when you sit down to have that conversation, what are you talking about? And what are the steps you go through with that person up to, if necessary, the, hey, maybe this isn't a good fit for you conversation? And then maybe on the flip side, like what would the conversations look like if it begins to look like, hey, someone's actually maybe this role is not a good fit for them in a completely different way because they're outgrowing the role. It's not that they can't fulfill some things about the role, they're outgrowing it. Can we get some practical, like how do we handle those conversations?
I unmuted. One. So does that mean I have to go? It's a really.
I have a thought. I'll go.
Yeah, go first.
One, I think this process should take you way longer than I think people think it should. In our desire to make life easy for ourselves, we are very ready to avoid conversations. We're very ready to discard people, to be honest. We're very ready to, in our own anxiety, to blow up, maybe, right? Especially if you've said the same thing 3,000 times and it's not registering, right? And so, one, we need to continue to be committed to our people, whether that's like a volunteer who you have brought on, or a person you've hired. There should be a long process, especially if it's like as simple as like, hey man, you made the same mistake, making our slideshow for Sunday school over and over and over again. And it's just like little organizational things. If it's like not detrimental to, you know, the function of the ministry, like you can let those mistakes ride and then talk about them after, versus like, you know, you get to the staff meeting the next week and you're like, I've told you 8,000 times. Like, that is not a helpful response, because it induces shame. It makes them want to hide their mistakes. Shaming someone for the mistakes they make is never going to solve a problem. It's just going to make a new one for you, where they hide their mistakes from you and then try to fix it last second. But if you respond in such a way where it's like, ah, hey man, like, can we like make sure this goes right? And you have the same tactical, as Matt would say, surgical response to people, that gives them no room to like even like have like an anxious response to what you're saying, then like they can respond, yes, I would love to do this. And even if you know they're going to make the same mistake, you stay committed to like growing them. And to be honest, we probably shouldn't like, the like process for like figuring out like maybe this isn't a good fit for you should just take, it should take you forever. You know, it should take you a really, really long time. And there are like, you know, there are sin situations that like warrant like quicker responses. But we're talking about, if we're talking about like regular leadership things, like that's on the like heart of the leader to like be strong, endure, have some endurance to like disciple this person, love this person well, I think.
Yeah. That's a good word about, yeah, just being patient and kind of having the long view in mind. And I know we're about to have to start wrapping this up, but Matt, I'd love for you to chime in on that, and we can land the plane.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Long game is good. For sure. I think that's a good word. I agree. The other thing is that you know how I am the problem sometimes. That's important too. And I think it's important for all of us to say that, because we can understand the theory, but putting it into practice is really hard. It's like that person who went to counseling a couple times, and now they've got all these things to say, but they haven't put the work in. And you're like, ooh, that was maybe even worse for you now that you know the things to say. And that can happen with this, right? This self-differentiation can turn into gaslighting, for instance, if you're not thoughtful and careful and put in the work yourself. So yeah, so I am the problem, and you need to know that. And like, we don't come at this like we know what we're doing, right? And I do think the second thing that I would say is that helping that person that you're leading to just say it, like, own that thing that was wrong, right? So there's a difference between me coming over the top and being like, hey, what's going on with the slides? How come you can't do it? Versus helping them to be like, I know it's weird, but like saying something out loud gives them more ownership over what they're doing. Yeah, I keep on making a mistake with those slides is so much better than telling them they're making a mistake with the slides. So figuring out how to do that actually, they're right. It's almost like Jesus told us that our by our words we would be judged, kind of thing, right? Like, it's almost like saying something out loud gives you an ownership that brings you to the next level of health and change. So I think that's a practical way that you can help someone grow as well.
That's really good.
Sorry, one last
thing. Yeah, go for it, Oscar. Yeah.
And I think if you have done your work on the front end, people won't be surprised when you bring this stuff up to them, right? So you are taking time to like reiterate things over and over again, because it's like, that's the high accountability, high grace thing. Like, you're saying stuff every time. You're not like, you know, you're picking your spots, right? You want to pick your spots, but you don't want to, you can't like let the same thing go over and over again, because then it grows and gets worse. And so you pick your spots, but you also hold people accountable consistently. So it's not a surprise when the shoe drops and they're like totally thrown off.
That's really good, because all of us on this podcast right now have heard plenty of situations where that exact thing did not happen, where they didn't have the consistent feedback, and then all of a sudden they are surprised and you're not a good fit here. And I feel like that's such a cliched phrase to throw out to just get rid of somebody instead of doing the work of what all we're talking about. And, you know, if we've learned anything from this discussion today, it's leadership is hard. It's not easy. And, I hope those out there listening, whatever side you've kind of landed on this, and if you've been the ones that have been hurt, or if you're the ones that are in leadership, that there's something you can glean from this. I know there's so much more to talk about, and I just really appreciate Oscar, Matt, Linda being a part of this. And who knows, we might have a follow-up to talk about plenty of things we didn't get to today. But appreciate you guys. Thanks for your time. Have a good one.